So there's a global pandemic. A virus is sweeping across our world, still, and society has changed. Why is this happening? Is it time for spring break again? How about getting a vaccine from a beer tram? Well, if you haven't considered these questions yet, you will soon. And we'll be here with you, your personal guides in this journey, this descent into chaos. Thank you for joining us on Staring at Goats.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is goat time. It is time to stare at some goats, decide which one we're going to eat first now that we're in the apocalypse. We're in what we hope to be the waning days of the apocalypse, but don't let that confuse you. Waning does not mean gone, and we do not have a time frame, but we do know that so far it appears to be waning, which is good news for everybody. But yeah, you're not here to listen to me think about that out without the guidance and knowledge of the co-hosts of the show, the co-pilots, Mr. Jacob,
woo woo,
and Mr. TV's Travis.
Howdy.
I don't know why I decided to go all Southern there for a second, but that was that. You know, every now and then a little D-Wayne slips out. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, you were channeling your D-Wayne. We took pre-show to another level.
Channeling the
just
inner.
Don't let D-Wayne slip out in public. You'll get a ticket for that.
Yeah, I know. You get a, we got a 311.
A D-Wayne slips out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they used to call it back in college. I remember those days. Oh, his D-Wayne slipped out. Better be careful around that guy.
You're going to mess around, and next thing you know, you'll end up on a list that you don't want to end up on.
You got exactly. That right. Speaking of lists you want to end up on. I'm going to go ahead and go into the round table because I have to say that I have probably the most positive about my overall environment than I have been in a significant amount of time. Now, whether that positivity is placed properly or not is a whole nother thing. But for me personally, I'm feeling very positive, and whether it's a placebo effect of knowing there's vaccines in my area somewhere and people are getting them or what, I'm feeling good about it. And it comes from two things, I think. One is sunshine. Oh, my word, yes. It's been a beautiful week here.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful week. Like, hot enough that if you worked outside long enough, swamp booty would creep into your life and you'd wish you had a bidet. And that's the kind of heat that I thrive in. That is my natural state. I'm from South Alabama, as in my genes. And because of that, we have South Alabama in our genes. And that means it's swampy in days like this. And I feel like that's a natural state of me as a human. Some people, they love the winter. They want to be warm in wintertime. Or they want to be bundled up and are like, yeah, I can deal with this. Or they just want to be walking around in shorts. In the 30 degree weather, I'm not that person. I'm like water in the summertime. I flow. I mean, I'm swimming because it's humid around here, but it's like, oh, I'm loose. I can wear my t-shirt, I can wear my shorts. I'm feeling good. So I got all that going for me, which is nice. And then I'm reading on my work email list. Somebody's like, hey, here's a link to a place to get on a list for wasted vaccines. And my work being the responsible place that it is, everybody's chiming in like, hey, is this jumping in line? Are we jumping in line? Because jumping in line is wrong, and we're not going to jump in line and use this link if it's jumping. And then like a whole bunch of people are coming in like, no, I signed up, called a place. They said, you're not jumping in line. Don't stress. We have more vaccines than we have appointments today, and we need to fill them. We need to get these into arms, or we're going to have to throw them out. So I'm like, well, that's positive. Then somebody else goes and they call someone and they're like, no, I totally jumped in line and I felt real bad about it. And they canceled my appointment when I got there. And I'm like, okay. So I'm trying to like, I'm Charlie Day with the red yarn, like putting all the things together. I'm like, okay, what is going on here? And I found in all of my research between the email list and people positively confirming that they were able to get an appointment, that it seems the rural areas around my county have these so-called wasted vaccine lines where you make an appointment on the normal website and they're just like, we're taking everybody because we can't get people to come. But if you do that with local hospitals and local doctor's offices, getting the opposite. you're going and they're like, wait, are you in group three? You shouldn't be here. And they're kicking you out because they've got other people they want to take care of first. So it really seems to just depend on where you go. That being said, I did get a report from a buddy of mine today that said a local hospital that we have has a no-waste vaccine list you can get on via email. So you email them, you say, I want to get on your no-waste vaccine list, and they put you down. But when they call you, you have got to come. Like, you have got to be there within an hour, or they're going to call somebody else. There's no, like, set me up with an appointment. They're like, we got vaccines. Get your butt down here and get your shot. Which seems fair to me. I think that seems like a decent deal. I know Walgreens in the area is doing something similar. People are showing up at 5:30 in the afternoon and maybe or maybe not getting a shot. I think based on what I understand and see what's happening is the vials have X amount of doses and then some. So you're ending up with like you've got 5 1/4 doses. So out of 4 bottles, you get another dose. And they're like, well, we're not wasting that. So we combine those together and we get one more dose. That's what Stephanie was explaining. As a pharmacist, she was kind of like, that's likely what they're doing is they're not getting 5. They're not getting 6 out of a bottle. They're getting 5.5. And then they're using the extra halves to get 6 and trying not to waste anything, which seems pretty cool to me. So anyway, long story long, I guess. I put me and Stephanie on the list. Only to find out that we might be in group 4, which might open up next week anyway. So we'll see.
Because group 4 opens up next week, it looks like. I think they're going to do it here.
But group 4, Jacob, group 4, they include overweight and obese. And to be overweight, according to the definition, you have to have a BMI above 25.
Correct.
How many people have a BMI below 25?
I was going to say there's like 8.
There's like 7 people. That's like they might as well just open it up to everyone because I'm overweight. I mean, I'm a 29. But BMI, as we all know, is a garbage number. It's a stupid. It doesn't account for body type. It doesn't account for bone structure. It doesn't account for muscle mass. It accounts for nothing but height and weight. It's terrible. But I'm overweight enough that I'm in group 4.
Yeah, but technically, maybe not. It's supposed to be 2 conditions. You have to have 2 of the 12 or 18 conditions that they list. It's not just 1. So if you only meet the overweight category, then technically you're not supposed to be in group 4. You're supposed to be in group 5.
Group 4 with hypertension. And so I have had high blood pressure every time I go to the doctor's office.
I'm not saying that you're not in group 4. I'm just saying that, not everybody who's listening who's 200 pounds and 6'2" is just slightly overweight doesn't necessarily put them on that category.
They could come up with something.
They could. Steven didn't read the deep dive, by the way. We were going to actually talk about whether or not this is ethical or not.
Well, we can still talk about whether it's ethical, but I'm just going to talk about how I'm going to go get in line if I can. and then we can talk about whether I'm properly doing that or not. I had a buddy who's very conscientious, and he went to a place locally. He made an appointment, and he called them after he did. He said, am I taking anybody's place? Like, is this a bad deal? And they're like, no. This is you're doing the right thing. Come on in. He went on in, he asked another nurse, like, am I taking anybody's place? Because I don't want to get this vaccine if it's meant for people in a different group. And they're like, no. And she confirmed with another nurse, got the name of the person that was had the appointment and canceled. And they were like, you're here, they're not. You can give me your arm. And they shot him up. And again, we can discuss the ethics of it. But this alone... The idea that it seems like there is a plentiful vaccine and there's not a resource shortage. Yeah, everybody's not getting it the same day. That wouldn't happen even if we had all of them at once. It's a logistical thing. But it seems that people who need them are able to get them, at least as far as I can tell from my experience here, which is good. That's good news. And that's left me feeling positive about the future for once and the end of the show. that it may eventually come to an end, and we'll have to come up with something else to talk about.
Oh, I can't wait for that day.
Yeah,
that'll be a good day.
Yeah,
brainstorming ideas for a new show instead of this every Wednesday.
Yeah,
I mean, I love talking to you guys, and I love hanging out with the folks in chat. But I'm not. Yeah, I'm still struggling with this show.
We can come up with something else to talk about.
Yeah. But I'll quick go next since I'm already chatting. I hate COVID. I hate it. I'm in the complete opposite end of where Steven's at. I got my second vaccine this week, my second shot. So I should be on cloud nine. But on the same day I got my second shot, a lady came over and she was part of our centering group. And they had a child right around the same time that Ashley had William. And I realized exactly what we're missing. And I'm crushed for William right now because he doesn't know anyone. He knows Sam. That's his idea of a kid. And there's no interaction there. He's just kind of watching him play. His idea of adults are the people that dote on him. He doesn't understand that there's something more than the five people in his world. And, you know, he got to see another child and just watching them interact, it was glorious. But watching them interact through a wall, essentially, because anytime they would break that barrier, that 6-foot barrier, both parents just went rushing in, grabbing their children and running back. And it was awful. It was the worst thing I think I've seen. And I loved hanging out with them for 5 minutes because I got to actually leave work for 5 minutes, leave this desk for 5 minutes and go check it out. And just say hi to them. So it was nice to have that discussion with them for 5 minutes and good to see them. But oh my word, just it was crushing. And I don't even know when William will be able to do that. I have no idea. We can't protect him like you can protect most kids because he can't wear a mask because he's too young to wear a mask. You can't wear masks until you're two. And he licks rocks in the driveway. You can't keep him away from things and stuff. So for us to try to delude ourselves to believing that we can actually keep him safe in an open and exposed environment is absolutely crazy talk. And I don't know what to do from here with him because even if I'm vaccinated, even if Ashley's vaccinated, we still are in a position where we've got to take care of him. We just got word that another lady in our centering group, she had to have her youngest child, the one that was born right around the same time William was, tested for COVID because she got sick and the doctors wouldn't see him unless he had a negative COVID test. So then he had to go get a COVID test and have that quick fix. And, you know, this is... It's the world we're living in, guys. And I don't know what to do with a less than 2-year-old who can't really protect himself at this point. I mean, we can tell older kids, look, put a mask on, don't touch things, wash your hands, stay away from these people, make sure that you don't interact as heavily as you normally would. And they get it. They understand. Now, whether they listen or not, that's a different story. But at least they have some concept of what's going on. I mean, I look at Sam and I go, at least he's not perfect every time by no stretch of the imagination. I don't think we expect him to be, but he's got it. He understands and he's unbelievably conscientious about it. Probably more conscientious than a lot of people.
He's better than I am. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I look at that and I go, okay, now there's hope for that, for them, for the older children and even 12 to 18 year olds. Sure, yeah. And I'm like, okay, yeah, there's hope for them. But for 2-year olds, what do we do and when do we do it? Because I don't have a clue. I am completely lost. I don't even know what to do.
Yeah.
I'm back to awesome. I hate COVID again this week.
Yeah. Nothing'll wreck your high than watching what could have been. It's like that that time we took Sam to the park with a friend and they had to like socially distance play. It was so stupid. It was so frustrating. So yeah, I know what you're going through to some extent, but yeah, like you said, when you're a sentient being, you can put on a mask and be told rules. When you're not so much sentient, you're just kind of like bebopping around, licking doorknobs. It's a lot harder to wrangle that for sure.
It is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm back to hating COVID. And, Og, I'm blaming you for Duke winning tonight and Duke winning last night. It's your fault. We just wanted, as fans, we just wanted to see the season end because it's been an absolutely horrendous disaster of a season. And you jinxed us. and you got them playing to a level where they're just steamrolling people, and I'm pissed with you because you're going to give us all hope, and then we're going to get crushed at the last minute because this team is not a good team.
Just it happens. Yeah.
I blame you, Aug.
You're still allowed to hate COVID, Jacob. I don't think you were ever expected to love it. So you're definitely tracking in a direction I think we were all hoping you would go, is hating it. But you're actively hating it, which is different than passively hating it. So I get that. Yeah. Travis, how's Michigan?
Michigan has been really nice. It was 60 degrees today. I could walk around outside without a jacket on. It was glorious. The last couple of days have been very, very nice. I also am finally becoming reacquainted with sleep and what that's like. Because I talked last week about Emeril getting a little sick and not sleeping very well. And Wednesday night ended up being the worst night of the week. That night, I didn't sleep for more than 45 minutes at a time. It was awful. I did get him to the vet on Friday. He is rather anemic. They're not sure exactly what's going on. He's going back this coming Friday. But he's eating again, so... That's good. We're on a positive swing. He's snoring like hell right now.
he needs to sleep.
He's tired too. Laying around all day. But he's eating again, and his energy is coming back. So we're doing better. But boy, until probably Saturday night, sleep was just not something I knew, and it was getting really rough. Last Thursday and Friday were so difficult for me because I was so exhausted from the entirety of the week. And he felt like I was mad at him. So he was moping around the house. It was bad. I felt so bad. But we're doing better. So, and the nice weather helped too, because it let us get out and walk. He doesn't have to worry about snow getting in his paws or any of that. So I think we both need spring. We both need a turn in the weather.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, it's just been business as usual. Which is fine.
Like, when you were having those rough sleepy nights, was the days just as bad? Like, were you having to get up from work a significant amount more to help him out? Or is it mostly night that it was the struggle?
It was mostly at night with the struggle.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it was worse at night than during the day, but for whatever reason it was.
Yeah.
So
everything sucks at night. Like, kids, when they're sick, they're always worse at night. When you get a cold, it's always like about 7 p.m. that your face fills up with junk and you're like, I have to sleep in an hour. This is great.
Yep.
And the same thing when you got the trots, I guess. You got to get out there, and I guess he had anti-trots, which is,
he definitely had the trots, and I felt so bad. I get him to the vet, and the vet was like, well, thank you for bringing what sample you were able to get, but we can't test anything with it. And I was like, I'm sorry. Like, yeah. I tried, there was nothing to pick up. Oh, it was terrible. So, it's better now. He's much better now. And he's eating regularly, although he's a picky little son of a, they gave me food, and the vet was like, I will be very surprised if he doesn't scarf this down. 'Cause it was like the super calorie laden food. Mm-hmm. And she even gave me, appetite stimulant for him. And the first day I give him that. Wait a little bit, put some of that food in a bowl, doesn't care for it at all.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, come on, dude. He only wants rice and ground beef, and that's it.
He's so picky.
He's now a picky old man.
That's wonderful.
So I cook for Emeril like every two or three days, and I make up enough food to feed him for a couple of days.
That's fantastic. I remember we had a dog named Taco. He was a Chihuahua, and he was overweight. he wasn't so much a Chihuahua as he was like some kind of weird football with eyes. Like, he was just this fat, fat Chihuahua. Doctor's like, he needs to lose weight. Because he would run around the house and he'd just fall over and start making this sound. We never could figure out what that was. But if you got him too excited, he'd start losing it. And I remember my mom, we tried to feed him wet, right? But he wouldn't eat all the food properly. So she ended up getting him like that food you make, you put in a bowl and you put water on it to like add, it's like gravy, like Oat Noils or something. I can't remember what kind of dog food it was. But it was the complete O'Doyle
rules.
Yes, O'Doyle rules. It was the complete opposite kind of food you feed a dog with a heart murmur and a weight condition. But he loved it. So you're just like, here you go, dude. Just it was awful. He was barely a Chihuahua. He had to be mixed with something. good. Well, I'm glad Emerald's feeling better. I'm sure the whole Legion of Dorks was rooting for him.
Well, I appreciate it. And I'm just glad he's feeling better because it was rough.
Yeah. Mm. Poor little guy.
Then, of course, my brain starts swirling and starts going to all the worst possible things that could happen. And that's the last thing I need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Travis, are you a worrier?
Yes. Yeah. I come from a long line of warriors. it's the way of my people. So. No, I definitely have the brain that's like, okay, so here's the situation. Here's the worst possible outcome. We're going to focus on just that. And that's going to be all of your thoughts from here forward. And, eventually I have to wrestle that so much.
Yeah.
It's bad.
But, yeah. So essentially you worry about worrying.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, that's the thing. Cause I go to the worst possible thing. I start to worry about it. Then I worry that I'm worrying about it, which compounds it, feeds it. It becomes a vicious cycle. And then eventually I give up and I stop caring about anything for about 15 minutes and then I'm fine. Yeah. It's just getting to that point.
If you call your mom and you know she's supposed to be at home and she doesn't answer if you call twice, where does your brain go?
Well, that's a bad situation because my mom doesn't answer the phone ever. She's
okay. Fair enough.
Neither of my parents know how to answer a phone.
I got you. Understood.
But I would say, I mean, the way my brain would work in that situation is great. Mom fell down the stairs.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. You and I could be friends. We could.
She fell down the stairs. She broke a hip. She's laying at the bottom of the. Now I got to go get her. I mean, but what's weird about it is like my dad is similar to me, but he's also one of the most calm people ever. So I mentioned that my mom had a minor stroke. The morning that happened, I get a call from my dad at 8 o'clock in the morning and I was working nights at the time. He never calls me ever. He calls me at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I wake up, I'm half awake and I'm like, hey, what's going on? He goes, well, I just wanted to let you know your mother's in the hospital right now. It's nothing to be concerned about. And I'm like, I'm like, what? Where do you need me to go? What do I need to do? What I can be there in 10 minutes. He's like, no. We're still in the ER. They haven't even gotten us a room yet, but she had a rough night. I'll call you when I have more information and hang.
Oh, hello. My anxiety is through the roof. Like it's a rocket to the moon.
Yep, so now I'm awake.
That's the worst thing he could have done.
Yeah.
And he calls me a couple of hours later.
Oh, even worse. You had 2 hours to do.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and it just, you know, just, my mom had a minor stroke. And her being who she is, she hadn't been to the doctor since like Reagan was in office.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she never was sick, right?
Yeah.
But meanwhile, she had high blood pressure for the better part of 3 decades.
Yeah.
And, So she was like, yeah, it was just a minor. And meanwhile, she has like no use of the left side of her body and she's left handed.
Oh,
so that was a fun one to start off with. Thankfully she recovered from it really well. And she's mostly back to normal. Although I make fun of her constantly because now she has a little more of a limp now. So I'm like, well, at least now I know I can get away from you. So I can just kick you and run. You're not going to catch me. But
all right.
See, there are only two people in my life that are I would worry about if they didn't answer their phone. Ashley, because she's got her phone pretty much tied to her at all times. And Steven. But Steven started screening phone calls. So
I don't answer my phone when I'm at work a lot of the times. You call me at like 1:30 and I've got a meeting in 3 minutes.
I'm needling him. No, I will tell you this. If Steven doesn't answer his phone, my brain immediately goes, something's probably going on with Steven. I need to get up with Steven because something's wrong. Because he always answers his phone. He always sends return text. He's always the man who's like, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to respond. And now you could call me 15 times.
Oh, yeah.
You might get me once. Him, you call him 15 times and you don't get him, bad things have happened.
So that's how I am. I am the person that always answers, that always responds. So I definitely have had people where I've been busy, or I've left my phone somewhere and gone out for a walk with the dog, and I come back 15 minutes later and I've got a half a dozen messages from the same person. Like, are you okay? What's going on? Like, I'm sorry. I took the dog out and enjoyed the sunshine for once. So
it's all about where you set your baseline, like how you operate. And that's how people assume you're either dead or you're just, you know, or you're going to text them back. For me, I just have real bad FOMO. So like, if I don't get a message right away, I'm like, what did I miss? So, because I like to know things. I like to know where people are. I like to know what they're thinking. I like to know what they're texting me. I like to know, I like to be on the money. I like to be on the spot with it. If I don't respond quickly, it's because I'm thinking about you, what you asked me. And when I think about what you asked me, I think about it for a minute, and then I go do something else, and I completely forgot what you asked me, and they'll come back like 3 hours later and go like, oh, shoot.
or three days and you're like, oh shoot.
Now I don't know whether I should really answer this or just breeze past it.
Yeah.
You always have to figure out, is it okay if I just breeze past this? Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Meme.
You throw a GIF up and you're like, that'll put enough space between the previous message and my new message.
Yeah. You can't see it, they'll forget about it too. Yes, perfect. Yeah.
I had to get over the worry thing with my at work, when your boss is like, hey, I need a couple minutes with you in 10 minutes. You know, can you call me up? And you're like, 10 minutes is a long time for me to sit here and think I'm fired, man. Like, you can't do this to people like me. Say, it's all good things. I just need to talk to you in a minute. And you will put me at so much ease. But when you do that whole, like, Steven, we need to see you in the principal's office, I want to just throw something. I'm like, don't do that to me. I have anxiety. Don't give me that. You got to tell me that it's okay or it's not okay. I will lose it. I will lose it. I will sit there and I will get no work done for 10 minutes. I'll sweat and they'll be like, hey, we just gave you a little bonus. I'm like, oh, well, that would have been nice to know ahead of time. Just calling to give you your bonus figures, buttholes.
Oh, yeah. I know what that's like. That is me 100% every time I get the message from the boss, hey, we're going to schedule a meeting with one-on-one with you on Friday.
Yeah.
Friday. It's Tuesday. Don't do that.
What are you? Yeah. I'm fired, aren't I? This is all over and you're kicking me on a Friday.
Yep. And Friday is the worst. No.
Yeah. Don't do that.
I always throw abouts in those messages. Hey, I need to chat with you about this. Do you have a few minutes? And I've got to do that or else I get the exact same response.
Yes, you are a good leader. Just the about, that's all we need. It's all
the breath, you could hear it just being sucked from wherever room they're at.
You feel the pressure change.
Your door shuts in your office.
Your electric pressure changes.
What was that? What just happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Well, speaking of what's happened, let's talk about what's happening, y'all. It is spring break, and you know what spring break means. It means a whole bunch of idiots amassing in a single place with barely any clothes on, and everyone just hoping for the best. Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber appeared on CNN's New Day and said the city is very concerned about vacationers, especially as Miami-Dade County averages more than 1,000 new COVID cases a day, and different variants of the virus continue to crop up. A lot of things have happened simultaneously, Gelber says. You have that variant down here, and we're still having sometimes dozens of deaths a day in our county. And at the same time, we've got incredibly cheap round-trip tickets for $40 from anywhere in the Northeast down here, discounted rooms, and people have been really pent up and wanting to get out with no other place to go than here, he continued. So we're very worried that there's going to be a convergence of people here and a real problem in the aftermath of that. Despite some colleges canceling spring break, Miami Beach police told CBS News that students from more than 200 schools are expected to head to the city this season, with the largest crowds taking place right now. Gelber said on CNN that he is most concerned that gatherings at bars might become the kinds of super spreaders that I think we saw a year ago, and noted that police officers are handing out face masks in the absence of a mask mandate from Governor Ron DeSantis. I would love to have the governor's voice urging people to be responsible, but we really don't have that right now. Gelber said, since we opened everything up and didn't allow us to impose a mask mandate, there's been a massive amount of suffering. Seems like Miami Dade would rather the governor say, hey, everybody mask up and do your part, when he's really saying, hey, Florida's open, let's party. here we go again. I don't know what to, that's. Let's rev the train back up. Remember Flatten the Curve? That was this time last year. Can we give that another go?
It'd be nice. Yeah, so I mean, I didn't like spring break normally, but I definitely, if I were in college now, I would have nothing to do with that.
No, I didn't do spring break. I just kind of stayed home and played WoW for the week. That was my spring break. It was new back then.
It's true. It's good.
Rev the train back up. That's the
want it to come back. We did this whole thing last year, a year ago. Flatten the curve. Save the first responders. Don't go outside and play in your front yard, but don't talk to your friends and stuff. We were all like, let's do it. And now we're like, F it, spring break. Remember, this is the time we started doing the show, and we did that phone tracking thing. They had that science that showed how people gathered at spring break and then diffused all the dots. All the dots went back home and it spread all over the flipping country.
Yeah, Chad just brought that up, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so. Ooh. Oh, boy.
Yeah, so here's what I'm struggling with, because I'm not sure this message is getting out there. There are definitely variants, right? There are quite a few variants. There's the UK variant. There's the South African variant. There's the variant that they think came out of California and Washington State. There's the variant that they think came out of New York. There's quite a few variants, right? And there, a lot of them are based on the similar mutations, especially at the same site that's pretty susceptible to mutation. But regardless, there are variants out there, and the vaccine works on a lot of those variants, and some variants it doesn't necessarily work on. The way you get variants is to increase the rate of transmission. The more people get it, the more increased number of variants there are out there, because mutations do happen, and mutations happen at a specific rate that's based on the number of freaking transmissions. So if you keep the number of transmissions down, guess what happens? You keep the number of variants down. And that's especially important when we're talking about vaccines and the availability of vaccines, because right now we have some really great vaccines for COVID. But the more transmission that happens right now, then that means that the more opportunity there are for variants and the more opportunity there are for the vaccine to not work. Mm-hmm. So with more transmission comes the increased chance of the vaccine no longer working. And then we've got to start this process all over again and try to figure out what works and what doesn't. Now, granted, it will be a completely expedited process because, you know, they'll already have at least some emergency use authorization, and they'll be able to get it in the pipeline a little quicker. But still, that's the whole point of this. And so I look at things that are happening like spring break and the mask mandate, removal of the mask mandates over in Tennessee and Mississippi and Texas and mostly dumbass Southeast states at this point. But I listen to this and I go, you're just not getting the message. You just don't. You're not understanding what's really happening out there. And I don't know if it's true ignorance or if it's just purely stupidity, because at this point I don't know what to call it. But hey, there's my 5-minute rant.
Dang Zoomers. That's what you call them. Zoomers. I saw a post the other day and it said, Time Magazine reported something about millennials causing this stuff. And somebody tweeted back and said, millennials are now in their mid-30s, sitting at home with their kids doing nothing. Stop blaming us for everything. Like, this is a whole different generation. You just had it so stuck in your head that you think that millennials are still destroying every industry. And like, we're all settled now. We all have kids that are sitting around doing nothing. Go yell at the children. Oh, it's pretty good. Yeah, anyone younger than a boomer is a millennial. That's a good point, Dean. Thank you for that.
I mean, Gen X is kind of the lost generation, right?
Gen
I mean,
X is sitting there eating popcorn.
Xers?
No, because Xers didn't do anything. Xers were the whatever generation.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't give a flip. So. Good for them.
They're all the ones without the hypertension.
They're just like, dude, we grew up in grunge. We don't even care.
That's very true. Anyway, let's talk about lactation. You want to?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
SARS-CoV-2 antibodies are detected in human breast milk post-vaccination. This is big for breastfeeding mothers and for potentially pregnant women. A new paper released this week describes the detection of antibodies to the virus in human breast milk following vaccination of lactating mothers. This could guide patients, healthcare workers, and public health policymakers alike as to the deployment of vaccines in pregnant and lactating mothers. Clearly, this is something that we're interested in reading from our family's end, by the way. Clinical trials have excluded pregnant and lactating mothers from vaccination, leaving little evidence to guide this decision-making. This study, however, aimed to explore the presence of these specific antibodies in the virus in the breast milk. The researchers designed the prospective model to test the effect of the vaccination on lactating mothers. The participants were all breastfeeding mothers who wished to take both doses of either the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine between December and January of this year. Researchers examined breast milk, collected samples before the vaccination, and then at 11 time points up to 14 days after the second dose was administered. They found that the baseline or pre-vaccination samples did not have any significant levels of antibodies to the virus. They also found that antibodies specific to the virus were found at markedly higher levels after 7 days after the priming dose. The two things that they still need to study are the durability of the presence of the antibodies, so how long do they last? And the second thing is obviously the contribution of these antibodies to infant immunity and whether or not it provides any level of protection. Can it get past the gut? So important for breastfeeding mothers that, I mean, it can't be bad for these antibodies to be in breast milk. It can only be good. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not it helps, that's, we can argue yes or no, and we could do some studies to try to figure that out. But this isn't a bad thing at this point. So I started looking a little bit further, guys, and I found a joint statement from several professional organizations, more specifically the American College of OBGYNs, the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. And all three of those organizations put out a joint statement saying this: as experts in reproductive health, we continue to recommend that the vaccination be available to pregnant individuals. We also assure patients that there is no evidence that the vaccine can lead to loss of fertility. While fertility was not specifically studied in clinical trials of the vaccines, no loss of fertility has been reported among trial participants or among the millions who have received the vaccine since their authorization, and no sign of infertility has appeared in animal studies. Loss of fertility is scientifically unlikely.
That's good news.
That's a pretty strong statement coming from those three organizations. So,
yeah.
You know, this is a discussion that's active in that pregnancy community right now, is whether or not there's loss of fertility. And when three leading reproductive medicine organizations come out and make that kind of a joint statement, that's saying something. So mm-hmm. Pregnant women out there, or women who are thinking about getting pregnant, or families that are thinking about getting pregnant, do some research, do some reading. Try to understand what is real and what are these scare tactics in YouTube to make everybody fear the world.
Yeah, that's really mm-hmm. good. I'm glad you went the extra mile there. Kind of hard hitting news you'll only hear on Staring at Goats for all your COVID related news. Zapho did bring up an interesting question, and I wanted to throw it at you. It's kind of, I don't know if it's common knowledge, but people tend to think that the breast milk is a big deal when it comes to immunities in general. Like, breast milk is really good for kids in kind of priming their system. So it seems you'd venture to guess that these being present could potentially cause that. Is it just that there's no data right now that they can confirm or deny that it works?
Yeah, zero data.
Yeah. So it's more, it might help. We don't really know. But
yeah,
it's
that's,
not bad.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly my thoughts, is that none of this is a bad statement. This can only be good.
Right.
And if there are antibodies found, let's hope that it does cross that gut barrier and you can actually get some protection from these antibodies and it doesn't just get destroyed in the in the stomach.
Yeah.
But worst case scenario, okay, they're destroyed in the stomach. So what? Best case scenario, they're absorbed and the baby actually gets some level of protection, like Zafo had mentioned. So I think best case scenario, hooray. Worst case scenario, no big deal.
Yeah. There's no downside to it. So America could soon be swimming in COVID-19 vaccines. In just 2 months, the United States could go from a situation of scarcity to one of abundance, which seems interesting to think about as people right now are kind of frantically trying to get it. But it's not a switch that flips, but it's a sliding scale that happens differently community by community, said Andy Slavitt, White House senior advisor for the COVID response team. This is not something that will start at some magical day in the future. It's begun today, and it's something that we have to make sure we're addressing. With a plentiful supply of vaccines, there will be more urgency to convince people, to convince the reluctant to accept it. Otherwise, the abundance of vaccines will become a stagnating surplus, and it threatens to undermine kind of our ability to move beyond the pandemic. When we start to have more vaccine available, we're going to be in bad shape because we're going to see a lot of people who don't want to get vaccinated, said Bernadette Bowden-Albala, Dean of the Public Health Program at UC Irvine. So far, about 18% of Americans have been immunized against COVID-19. Bowden-Albala thinks that there will be vaccine surpluses in some areas as soon as early April. And messaging is what's going to matter once we get to this point of surplus. The easiest group to reach are going to be those who've simply put it off because of the hassles of getting an appointment. So for them, the messaging needs to be, look, immunization is quick, easy, and free, said Christopher Morris, expert on health communication at Bryant University in Smithfield, Rhode Island. You want to tell them it's free and how easy it is to get an appointment, he said. Something like, in the time it takes you to order a cup of coffee, you could be vaccinated against COVID-19. The message should not be, we've got tons of vaccine, because then people will be convinced they can put it off for longer. So you might say, get vaccinated, spend Easter with your family. Or a church might encourage people to be fully vaccinated so they can sing together, said Dr. Kelly Moore, Deputy Director of Nonprofit Immunization Action Coalition. Younger people who don't necessarily feel at risk might be convinced to get vaccinated to help others, but they may be more enticed if they can go out to the movies again, eat dinner with their friends, or hang out in bars. So they're going to be focusing more on social impact versus health impact, says Morse. There's mobile clinics, there's pop-up vaccination sites, public service announcements from local leaders. These are all going to be very important in getting people out to get the vaccine. So, I mean, the big thing is we're going to slowly move from not having enough for people to having too much. And so we need to really focus on our messaging for people to get the, put it out the right way so that more people just want to go get vaccinated. Cause I think that's the concern they have, is that if we get to a point of surplus, people are going to drag their feet even more, especially those that are on the fence about it.
Yeah. This is what we've talked about for a year. We were talking about how if they had pulled a Rosie the Riveter early on and messaged that it wasn't that this was going to go away immediately and we didn't have to do anything. It was that, no, let's take action now and let's band together like America, like the America we all have idealized in our head, and kill it. And it's so much messaging. I mean, that's how advertising works. That's why you buy Coke over Pepsi. That's why you think Doritos are delicious. That's why Totino's pizza rolls are the number one food of every poor college student, outside of ramen, probably. But like, these are things that matter. How you say it matters. It's like Danny Ora in the chat said, give me a place where I can get a vaccine and a cup of coffee and we'll be on to something. Best station of vaccine place outside of Starbucks? Yeah, let's do that. Yep. That sounds awesome. You want to put a vaccine spot in front of the AMC theater? Yeah, let's do that. That sounds awesome. And these are things, if you make it convenient, you make it free, you make it easy, people can be like, okay, well, I was walking in the grocery store and there was the vaccine tent was set up and they had real people out there giving them, and you go, F it, I'm here already and there was no line. That's genius. Let's do that. I'm all about it. But seriously, though, the Starbucks and a vaccine at the same time sounds pretty legit to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I think so. I think Dani Ora's onto something there. Yeah,
she's got it. Mm-hmm. She's got it. That's what I want.
Doritos are delicious. I agree.
Yes, they are delicious.
You don't need marketing for that. That is fact.
Doritos and pizza rolls sell themselves.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen a Totino's pizza commercial. I've seen Doritos commercials, but Totino's still in business.
Yep.
What brand comes to mind if I say the word red?
Ooh, Marlboro.
Marlboro.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're an outlier. I mean, it's just the color red. If you think of the color red, what brand comes to mind?
That would definitely be Coke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was about to say that most people answer Coke in those instances. There's branding and representation and marketing matters a lot.
For sure.
Oddly, in the chat says Mountain Dew. Why would Mountain Dew come to mind with red? Code Red Mountain Dew? Is that what he's thinking?
Oddly's high. What is he doing?
Yule is back. That's what
Yule,
it is.
Cousin Yule over there. Right. Cousin Yule making no sense. Mountain Dew. I
tell you.
Mountain Dew.
You said yellow, then I'd say, yeah, you're right.
Mellow yellow, baby. Yep, oh, gosh. Mellow yellow. So interim public health recommendations have come out for fully vaccinated people. This may be the greatest list of things. This is why my positivity's been up. This is the greatest list of things that we have received from the CDC since we got the initial list of things that said, do this and you'll survive. Now we've got, you can do more and likely survive. And that's great. That's great. This is why AMC's stock went up today. This is all good news. Fully vaccinated people can visit with other fully vaccinated people indoors without wearing a mask or physical distancing. Get ready for those orgies, France. We're back to 88 people as long as y'all all got the vaccine. Get on it.
I mean, y'all are doing 81 people without the vaccine, but 88. You can get back up to your target number, which is
an even number, which is important.
Important number.
You know, maybe not. It could be odd, I guess. You got that one guy wandering around, nowhere to go.
That one guy's sticking in places that shouldn't go.
He's into trouble. Visit with the unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk for severe COVID-19 indoors without wearing a mask or physical distancing. That's a big deal. That's grandma can hug their kids based on these recommendations. You're not high risk, but you're unvaccinated, but I'm fully vaccinated. Grandma gets a hug. That is the holy grail in terms of, in particular, my situation. Holy grail. Refrain from quarantine and testing following a known exposure if asymptomatic. Also pretty good. Not having to lock yourself in a room for 2 weeks. For now, fully vaccinated people should continue to take precautions in public, like wearing a mask. It's normal. Wear a mask, practice physical distancing, and adhere to other prevention measures when visiting with unvaccinated people who are at increased risk or who have been unvaccinated household member who is at increased risk. So, if you got your cousin with severe asthma who, you know, don't go to his house and just party because he's family, you still need to be respectful of that situation. Wear a mask, maintain physical distance, and practice other prevention measures when visiting with unvaccinated people from multiple households. Junior's birthday party, if you have a bunch of people there, you still need to be paying attention to your distance and your mask wearing. Avoid medium and large sized in-person gatherings. Get tested if you're experiencing symptoms. Follow guidance issued by individual employers and follow CDC and health department travel requirements and recommendations. This is all good news. This is one of the reasons I keep asking my dad every day, did you get vaccinated yet? You find one? You sweet talk that pharmacist? You doing what you can do? Because it's like, please get it, because once we're all like on the train, I'm going to Florida. And you know, like, I mean, you're gonna pee in a bucket and not go in anywhere on the way to Florida, but to get there, it's a big, like, that would be amazing. So I'm kind of like hopping up and down with joy when they said the whole low risk vaccinated unvaccinated shenanigans. Like, I'm like, okay, and that's, you know, there's still risk there. But it's everybody's got to decide their own risk level, right? What is worth doing the thing they need to do or want to do, and deciding, okay, is this all right? Is this going to make me? So it's, again, it's up to your individual preference and your individual feelings towards this kind of thing. But to me, CDC says that my risk level is at a point where I'm like, okay, grandma and grandpa get vaccinated and they've done their 6 weeks of two dose bull crap. You know, I'm coming. That's what you got is they haven't seen their kid, their grandkid for a year. And I haven't seen them for a year. Never mind Sam. He's fine. I want to see my mom and dad. I want to ride a four wheeler and go on. I'm going to ride a horse and we're going to have a good time. And eat chicken wings and stuff. Like I gotta have it.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, so this is kind of what's got me floating a little bit this week too, I think.
Go get them vaccines, guys.
Yep.
Yeah. Get them.
Go get them. So I'm going to be the bearer of bad news. You bring good news, which is CDC guidelines for vaccinated people. And, you know, grandkids can hug grandparents. And it's all great news from your end. Me, I get to talk about the death rate. And
of course you do.
Because that's just what, you know, you're on a cloud nine. I'm down in the dumps hating COVID. So I just bring all the death.
Yeah.
A jaw-dropping increase, 17%. More deaths in North Carolina in 2020 over 2019. So right now in North Carolina, 11,500 people have died from COVID-19 in the last year. But that's year spans years. So what they're trying to do here is try to figure out what the actual impact per year was. So wanting to get a better idea of how many lives were lost to COVID in each county, one of the registers of deeds made a request to all 100 all 100 counties across the state seeking information for total death rates in 2017, 2018, 2019, and 2020. A local news organization reviewed the data, and they saw more than 112,000 deaths in the state last year, which was a 17% year-over-year increase. In previous years, they saw roughly a 1 to 3% year-over-year increase. But last year, they saw a 17% spike. Now, 7,000 of those deaths were accounted for in COVID, right? The remaining 4,000 happened this year after the Christmas spike. So they only counted the 7,000 from last year for COVID-related. That means that they still saw a spike of roughly 8% from year over year that are non-COVID related deaths. And here's the quotes that we've pulled out of the article. There is a death toll associated with this that's not COVID itself. The death spike is jaw-dropping. When responding to inquiries about the year-over-year increase, more than a handful of deeds saw a register of deeds offices saw it, blah, 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 blah. They saw an increase in what they call deaths of despair, those linked to overdose, suicides, and alcohol addiction. We've seen so many suicides, so many drug-related deaths in the past year, said Sherry B. Richard, the register of deeds in Craven County. Of course, many of those were COVID-related in one way or another. So basically they're saying it may not have been COVID, but it was likely COVID-related, this 8% spike. So I think that says a lot on where we're at, both from a mental health perspective dealing with COVID and also from COVID itself. So pretty sobering numbers there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really.
That's not 17%. It's a lot of percents. And I'd imagine the 1% to 3% year over year, is that curve for population growth or is that just... Because, I mean, I can almost account for some of that being population-related. More people move into the state, more people die in the state.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could be right. But arguably, that should stay fairly constant relative to the overall data set. Because people moving in and people dying, it should stay. You wouldn't see a spike either way from that. You may. I don't know. But.
But the 17 is obviously COVID. I mean, that's and
COVID. Yeah, when you're seeing 1 to 3% changes, and then all of a sudden you see a 17 or even an 8% change.
Well, yeah,
those are pretty big numbers. We're talking about 100,000 deaths, and to see an 8% change, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're looking at the just taking out the okay, this person had COVID and died from it. You're still looking at what 2 to 8 times as many deaths. Depending. It's mm-hmm. just crazy.
Yeah. It's no good.
No, no. So we'll go back a little bit more positive. The Czech city of Brno turns a beer tram into a mobile COVID-19 testing center.
Yeah, so, baby.
A tram manufactured to transport beer enthusiasts around the Czech Republic's second city has significantly changed its purpose. Instead of being a pub on the rails, it's become a mobile COVID-19 testing center. While many countries, including neighboring Germany, have decided to ease up on restrictions, Czechia has currently ruled out the most strict lockdown in its history. One of the measures that should protect citizens from possible infection is that all factories and businesses now have to provide mandatory antigen tests to their employees. A unique way to test their workers for COVID-19 has emerged in the second largest city of the Czech Republic. From now on, the staff of Brno's public transportation company can get tested in a tram used by a local beer-serving pub. Trams and pubs have always been a symbol of the mostly student city of Brno. But since the pandemic's hit and the Czech Republic has become best in COVID with the highest number of positive cases in the world, they put best in COVID in large air quotes.
yeah, for sure.
Right after the tiny nations of Gibraltar and Andorra, pubs have been banned to all citizens. So this measure, as well as an unprecedented ban on public alcohol consumption, has left a particular tram with a local brewery used as a mobile pub unusable for its original purpose. But instead of letting the dust fall upon the vehicle, the brewery decided, hey, let's give it a different role. From now on, it serves as a mobile COVID-19 testing center that travels between various sites. So that's good. Like, everything gets shut down. You're not allowed to even drink alcohol in public. So put it to good use. Put your tram to good use. And there was a picture of it in the article, and it's a really cool looking tram too.
It is pretty rad.
I've been to Brno, beautiful city, really awesome place. And this kind of hurts me because Czech Republic, a lot of people don't know, but they drink the most beer per capita of any country. Mm-hmm. They invented the Pilsner. The Czech people drink a lot together. You can go and this is the best place to drink. I'm not a drinker, like a big drinker, but when you sit down at a pub in Czech Republic and they give you just the most stereotypical, wonderful pint mug that you'll ever drink from. You know, it's one of those swinging mugs. You're just like, this is the best place I've ever been in my life, and I live here now with your giant swinging mug of whatever Pilsner they had on tap. It is the best, and this is culture-defining for them. So I'm heartbroken for their pub situation, but I'm glad that they're making the best of it. I'm gonna have to ping this story to my one of my buddies over there and be like, y'all are doing the right thing, but my thoughts are with you because this is terrible.
Yeah,
this was also the country that had that big COVID party. It was over in the EU, remember that? That was what, in May of last year? COVID was over, so they were celebrating in the streets. And that didn't help the situation.
No, that didn't work very well.
Much at all. Yeah.
No. But I got to tell you, the folks in Europe are still taking it unbelievably seriously.
Yeah.
They've got a 6 p.m. curfew right now in France still. You can't leave your house after 6 o'clock. I mean, they're still taking it pretty damn seriously. We're taking off masks. They're curfewing and locking down at 6 p.m.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, we're yelling, we're taking our masks off and running naked through the street. We're doing it right. So let's get into our deep dive. We're talking about skipping lines earlier and what that means and whether it's ethical. Jacob, you brought this one. Do you want to introduce us to what you got going on here?
There was an article that we read earlier this week that was talking about is it ethical to jump line? And really, there are a couple of ways to jump line. If you're in Alaska, there is no line. Anybody could walk up anywhere and go get a vaccine now because they just opened up the whole state. But the couple ways that you can jump line, and this I say jump line very loosely because these are not necessarily ways to jump line. These are ways to get vaccinated quicker. Now you can argue whether or not it's jumping line or not, but one way is to volunteer. you can just go to one of these vaccination sites and volunteer either to be a parking. You can direct traffic. You can show people where to park. You can stand and point to the vaccine door, to the tent. I mean, you could check people in. You don't necessarily have to be a nurse. You can be a nurse. You could be delivering the shots. You could be doing any of those things, right? And obviously, they'll immediately vaccinate you just so that because you're dealing with these people and dealing with public, you have to be protected, right? So if you want to volunteer, that is one way to get the vaccine uber quickly, is to say, sign me up, guys. I'll help. And the minute you say, sign me up, I'll help, they'll ask you if you've been vaccinated. If you say no, they'll pop you in the arm. So that's one way. Another way is to, where's the second one? The other ethical defensible way is to bury your arm for shots that would otherwise be thrown away. Often people don't show up for their appointments, and these are hunting down leftover doses. Essentially what people are saying is despite some grumbling about younger, healthier people skipping the line by snapping up the few leftover doses, public health experts and many ethicists say that the most important thing is that vaccines don't go to waste. The goal is to be intentional and to be equitable, that people should not say no just because they wanted to go to somewhere else. Line jumping isn't great, but overall, we're trying to achieve herd immunity, and a shot in the arm is good for the entire community. But that's the argument against the ethical jumping of line. The argument for the unethical jumping of line would be saying, you know something, now this county is going to get more vaccines because you went and took counties that are in desperate need and continue to perpetuate this. For example, a county's allotted a specific amount of vaccines based on the number that they gave last week and based on the number that they gave the week before. And so if we're continually artificially increasing those numbers, that county is going to continue to get too many doses. And the counties that really do need it, the waitlist counties, the ones where people are clamoring for it, they will continue to get fewer and fewer doses because we're taking from those counties and applying them to other counties that are potentially smaller populations. So that's the unethical component, I think, that some folks are arguing, is that we're distributing these in such a way that we're trying to be fair and equitable. But just by the fact that the people in these specific regions are going out to these other areas is making it less fair and less equitable.
Well, that level out, though, like, eventually people who want to go all the way to Kinston to get a vaccine, we're going to tap out of those people, and they won't be going all the way to Kinston anymore. Because I think there's, like, I saw an appointment today for, like, 4 o'clock, and it was 1:30, and I was like, that popped up randomly out of nowhere. That means somebody's not going to that appointment. That's probably, that's probably a fair and open vaccine appointment. But I was like, an hour and a half's a long way when I've got this Wake Med email I can send and see if they'll hook me up, you know, in the next week or two. I mean, that's a 3-hour trip. Brown trip to get a shot in the arm, where you'll likely have to go back to that same place to get your next one.
Speaking of, this is an important point to capture. I had a friend of mine who had to drive about 2 hours to go get his first vaccine. When he was there, it was in a county that they didn't really understand what the rollout looked like. So they were like, sure, you could go get your vaccine, your second vaccine anywhere, especially closer to your own home. Why drive 2 hours back here? So he didn't schedule a follow-up appointment. So he gets back home and he starts calling around saying, I'd like to schedule my second vaccine. And everywhere that understands how the rollout's happening, it said, well, you should have done that whenever you got your first vaccine. You need to go back to the county that gave it to you. But now he's having trouble scheduling a second vaccine there because they don't have any appointments. And so now he's like, oh, shit, what do I do? So he's kind of caught in this, oh, shoot, I was told one thing, but in reality, it was something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably shouldn't have told him to do that. They probably should have cleared that up. But it happens. I mean, these are normal people doing these jobs. Mm-hmm. That's a pickle. And I mean, but it could come up. I mean, you're talking about 4 weeks in between vaccine one and vaccine two. 4 weeks is a long time to get some more logistical stuff happening, get more people in place. And he could end up in a position where there is a vaccine available locally at a more easy to get kind of way. So he's sure he can't make that appointment now, but he might be able to make that appointment 3 weeks from now. That's a long time, considering we've got more options for vaccine than we've had before. The U.S. just put in another order for 100 million J&J vaccines, which I think is the one that Harris Teeter is giving out, Walmart. They're doing the Johnson & Johnson, which is kind of bad for the look of Johnson & Johnson, where people are already skeptical about it. But I did want to talk about that, too, and I want to get back to the ethics. But I was looking into Johnson & Johnson and stuff. Like, the flu vaccine has a lower efficacy percentage than the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. But we want it significantly lower. It's like 55 to 61 or something. And Johnson & Johnson's like 72.
And it's year by year. Some years it's really good, like 55%. Some years it's down in the 30s. I've actually seen it 38% before.
Well, because Australia lies to us and tells us the wrong strain of the flu is coming. It's all Australia's fault. That's what's going on here.
You can't trust anybody who uses toilets that flush the other way.
Yeah, if you're walking on Earth upside down, you clearly are confused how everything works.
So, we're just kidding, Australia buddies.
Yeah, we're really not. But it's tough. So you end up with this messaging that they're not getting proper comparisons. They're looking at, I mean, my word, the mRNA vaccines at 90%+ that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. But Johnson & Johnson at 72 is better than the flu and still 100% good at keeping you out of the hospital and dead. So, and it's one shot. There's a lot of benefits to it being one shot. A lot of benefits. Mm-hmm. You just go get it and you're done. There's still a lot we need to know over time. And I think all that will come to the surface for all of them. But yeah, at this point, I would be getting like whatever is available. Just go get your shot. Keep this thing from spreading and screwing us all up even worse. But the ethics, I've already kind of talked about that at the beginning. It's to me, it's more about understanding and clearing it with the people you're getting the shot from. Like, I love that the people I've seen that were making appointments were calling immediately after and giving out the number for the actual hospital that they could get a direct call in and be like, hey, I just got an appointment. Double checking that I'm not screwing anybody over by getting one. I'm in group 5. And them going, oh, no. That appointment did free up. Just get in here. We got to throw this away at the end of the day if we don't put it in an arm. And that to me kind of frees you of that ethical weirdness. You're clearing it with the keepers of it. You're not lying. The doing it with deception is a problem. That's definitely an ethical conundrum. If I'm like, for instance, I've never been diagnosed with hypertension. So I can't with good conscience go say I'm group 4 because I'm overweight and have hypertension. Even though I have had high blood pressure at the doctor, I'm not on medication for it. So it's like that's beyond what I would consider a safe thing to do so that I could one day arrive at the pearly gates and be like, I didn't do that thing that one time and be like, look at me. But seriously, like I don't think I could do it in good conscience. I would just wait for group 5 or get a wasted vaccine. I don't know.
Yeah. But and that is very much who you are. I know there are definitely people who would see that as a gray area and probably take advantage of it for sure. I know I'm not one of them. I couldn't in good conscience say that, even though same thing. I am overweight and I have had high blood pressure, but never been diagnosed, not on any medications for it. So, but I do think that the way most people are going about it and the whole idea of, you know, clearing it with the keepers of the vaccine, you're not taking an appointment away from somebody so much as you are making sure that vaccine doesn't go to waste. I'm fine with that. Like, I don't see any problems there.
What do you think about the guy who not 3 weeks ago was a doctor, had access to vaccine, knew they were going to go bad, and he gave it to, you remember we told this story, he gave it to a couple people he knew and his wife, and was just completely ostracized by the medical community, lost his job, got in so much trouble over it. If he had done that now, rather than 3 weeks ago, when there was a scarcity issue, would he be in the hot seat like he was then? And do we owe him an apology?
Well, I don't think he would be in as much of the hot seat now as then, but we talked about it at that time where he wasn't trying to be sneaky about it, right? He was being above board, and he was basically like, look, I had this stuff left over. At the end of the day, I gave it to a few people so it didn't go to waste, type of thing. And he reported himself as having done it. So yeah, I didn't have a problem with it then. I would have less of a problem with it now, personally. So
yeah. Kelly says he was a pharmacist. I thought the pharmacist was that Wisconsin guy that dumped all the vaccines or let him sit out overnight on purpose.
Yeah, this was a doctor down in Houston, or I think it was Houston.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was an actual doctor.
Yeah.
This is a tough one for me because, you know, I completely understand the whole going to waste bit. I promise you. I mean, I understand it. I get it. But I think what the scramble is doing is normalizing this kind of approach, and it's normalizing not necessarily unethical behavior, but it's normalizing people getting the vaccine out of turn. Right. And so your buddy got it. Your next buddy got it. Oh, shoot. There's another buddy that's gotten it. Oh, and my buddy's buddy got it. Well, shit, I'm going to go get it because, you know, everybody around me's got it and I'm going to skip line too. And I think that's where the true ethical dilemma comes from. So, yeah, we could sit here and talk about not wasting shots. Sure. But all of a sudden, there's going to be a stigma associated with, well, shit, if everybody else around me is going to get it, then I'm just going to jump line. And then the people that really do need it, the 65-year-olds that haven't gotten it yet because they can't get an appointment because they're not as savvy as you on the computer or on the phone, all of a sudden, they're the ones that are coming to risk. So I see both sides. I think I lean more toward your end of the spectrum than I do the other end of the spectrum. But I definitely see the argument that from a public health perspective, people are going to start questioning their decisions because everybody around them is starting to figure out ways to cheat the system and to get a vaccine in their arm. And I use the word cheat, and that's probably not the right word, to game the system and still get a vaccine in their arm, even though they're not part of the group that's currently up. I definitely understand it. I'm probably leaning more toward it's okay, and let's rock and roll. Let's give shots to whoever needs to get a shot. Let's not throw a single dose away. But I do think we need to be careful with it because it's going to normalize this behavior. And then all of a sudden, when we're talking about people with multiple conditions or people that do have health issues that can't get access to the vaccine, that's when I think there's going to be a problem. So yeah, I think I agree with you guys for the most part, but, I do think we have to be cautious about this.
And one thing to consider with that is this is immunizing against something as opposed to curing it, which sure. I think would be a very different conversation. If this was a cure situation, then I would lean much further in the other direction.
Yeah.
Than I am with the immunization, because at least while there, it still could be a little bit of an ethically gray area, it's you're also helping to get herd immunity and keep those people who are at higher risk. You are creating situations where it is less likely that they could be exposed to it. That doesn't necessarily take away from, yes, they should still get that first, mm-hmm. but you're also not removing you're increasing the ability to not get infected.
There's a benefit, but you're doing it.
It's a weak benefit.
Right.
I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But
that argument flies against prioritization schedule, right? I mean, we all agreed to a prioritization schedule. We all said that this was the most important group, the frontline workers. That we all said the most important people after that were the people that were dying, the older folks. Then we said the essential workers are next, right? And then we said people with multiple conditions. And then we said everybody else, or actually, college kids and then everybody else, right? So we all agreed to this prioritization schedule. And by we, I mean the royal we. People.
I was about to say, I didn't agree to nothing. I didn't vote on nothing.
That's right. D-Wade wouldn't agree to nothing, no way.
No.
But if all of a sudden we're saying, well, you know, a shot's a shot, so let's just go get the herd immunity so everybody rush and get your shot. That's a different argument than your prioritization schedule. Now, all of a sudden, you're saying priorities be damned. Let's just get shots into arms. And all of a sudden, we're having a much different discussion.
It all depends on how it plays out. Like, I'm not saying that the ethics depend on the result or then justify the means or whatever, but if you got a bunch of people that are playing by the rules, let's say I'm group three and I'm playing by the rules and I'm trying to get an appointment and I can't get one or I don't know how to work the thing, and it's because all these people are storming the front door of Walmart and I tried to do the right thing and I can't get what I want. That seems to happen a lot with, like, just about, look at Dragon Con, trying to get a hotel room anytime, ever.
Trying to get a PS5.
Period. Trying to get a PS5, trying to buy a graphics card in the,
you can't get one.
Yeah, pandemic, silicone chips, shortage, China tariffs, just no way to get anything. Bitcoin, mine. But yeah, it is a tricky position to be in, because I agree with you. And one thing Kelly brought up is one thing that would nail me and just go, fine, I'll wait, is she said, so what I'm hearing is the real problem is the difficulty in scheduling an appointment for non-tech savvy and poorer communities. Boom. I mean, that's a truth that spreads beyond just COVID. Imagine the things you have to do for public services now that require you to, like, they call you up and they say, oh, well, just get on the internet and do the thing. And they're sitting down at their Packard Bell 256, processor going, okay, firing up old Prodigy dial-up, see what I can
dial-up, give me my dial-up connector, where's my AOL?
Yeah, we're not at that point. And it's like somebody saying, well, find a young person to do it for you. Like, what about the people who are alone and don't have a young person, don't have a grandson? It's like, that's not an easy answer. How do we assist them? That's a big gap.
Yeah, I think back to how I got the appointments for our in-laws, right? I mean, I camped the appointment site for four straight days until one finally popped up that was close enough for them to get. And then I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And it was a mad rush to get their information in and get the appointment. And I was able to get it. And it was early on in the process, and they met the criteria, so it was very easy. But who's going to camp that site for 4 days? I mean, I did because I was working on a computer and I was able to just sit there and camp the site while I was working. And it was a priority for me, but I think Kelly makes a good point. Who's going to do that? Especially if you're not a at least somewhat tech savvy individual.
Well, here's the counter argument to that though, because we brought this up a few weeks ago, talking about the mobility of people matters when it comes to whether a vaccine should go. Cause we were playing with that thought, and we didn't come down on one side or the other, but we were playing with the idea that people who are most mobile, people that are ootin' a boot, might be more important to vaccinate than the people just sitting at home watching Jeopardy on Sunday night. So you end up with a different prioritization schedule because you're looking at people who want to go to Daytona versus people that are just going to stay home and watch Daytona anyway. You know, see. Yeah, if I want to go to Charlotte Motor Speedway, and I'm going to go whether I got a vaccine or not, I'm a threat. And I should get vaccinated as soon as possible or make it possible for me to get vaccinated because I'm going to Charlotte Motor Speedway. Yeah. And I think that conversation's worth having, too. If I got to drag grandma out of the house, which she rarely leaves anyway, to go get a shot, maybe that... I'm being hypothetical here, but maybe that's not the number one person that needs the shot. So you end up in that space, and then where's your ethics? How do you deal with it? How do you decide who gets it and who doesn't?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, is grandma leaving the house not leaving the house because she's fearful of COVID, or is she not leaving the house because she hadn't gone anywhere in 5 years.
Grandma gets meals on wheels.
If she had the choice to leave, what's that?
Grandma gets meals on wheels.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking about that would be a very specific case. But I think a lot of folks are talking about not being able to go to the gym and just work out, and they're 80 years old and they need that because they need physical therapy, right? And they're not going, but we're going to make the argument, well, you know, they don't need it because they're not really out and about right now anyway. And they're old and they're not retired. They're retired and they don't have anywhere to go. But us young folks, we need it because we're out and about.
Yeah.
They need to be out and about too. And let's not pretend like they're doing themselves or we're doing them any favors by just saying, yeah, they're okay. They don't need to go out. They're retired. They're just sitting at home watching Jeopardy. Do they want to be out watching Jeopardy? Or do they want to be working out? Do they want to be going to the gym? Do they want to be going to the grocery store? Do they want to be volunteers? Most organizations are fully staffed by volunteers that are retired. And so all of a sudden you have these organizations now that don't have any help, right? So mm-hmm. I think this is a little bit more complicated than they're just retired and they don't go out anyway. I think it's they're retired and they don't go out, but the reason why they don't go out is because they're fearful to go out.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's a very important distinction. Are they not going out? Why are they not going out? Yeah. So
yeah. Fill out this survey. Tell us why you don't leave the house. Like that,
so that we can better serve you.
So that we can better serve you. Yeah, please press 1 for I stay inside because COVID. Press 2 because my grandkids won't let me leave. like this.
I mean, these are weird conversations
they are
that we're having, and it's not conversations that I would have ever expected. This is a conversation that I would expect to read about in a book, maybe, you know, after 1984, 1985. These are the conversations that I'm expecting from that novel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All plague fiction is different now. All plague fiction. not a single zombie movie should be the same. Not a single movie about a virus should be the same. Nothing. The mere phrase avoid it like the plague has completely lost all of its power because people didn't avoid it like the plague. You got to say like avoid it like people who don't avoid the plague or something, you know, like or avoid it like the people who are plagued. I don't know. There's got to be a way to still use it. But the way we use it now is wrong because we didn't avoid the plague like the plague. We went right out in it and went swimming and calling, you know, having weird orgies in France with each other. Like we were not doing anything we were supposed to. And I expect no single screenplay that gets written from now to infinity to have anything different than what we've dealt with now. We now know. We know what it looks like.
We have empirical evidence.
Yeah, we have evidence and we know that there's no chance of survival in the event of a disease we can't vaccine against or we can't immunize ourselves against. If this vaccine didn't come along, I don't know. I don't know what would happen. So thank you for that, science. Dogs says avoid it like someone gave you a mask.
Oh, that's a good one.
I like
our resident troll. So yeah. Sub has graduated to our resident non-movie watcher, and Og has graduated to our resident troll.
Yeah,
so
he gets to take
the place. We had to did we demote Sub or did we promote him? That's the real question.
Sub,
it's a lateral move.
Sub has promoted himself to just Legion of Dorks sage. He just drops in with wisdom that no 21-year-old should be capable of, and it lets us have it from time to time. I'm so grateful for all the people in Legion, Sub in particular, simply because he defies all that we have understood college-age kids to be. He is not that, and that's great.
Look, Og, yours is not a demotion. Resident Troll is, I mean, that's about as high a level of praise as we can give you.
You have a title.
It's an important job.
Yeah. You have a title. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But these are all good questions. I would love to dive in it further, but we're late on this. This has been a long show. But I want to hear from you guys how you feel about the ethics of, I'm hesitant to call it line jumping, but occupying an appointment that could otherwise have potentially been occupied by someone else who had assistance in getting one. Because I think that's what we're really getting down to here is... Mm-hmm. I can get the appointment, but I could also sit and try to help someone who doesn't know how to get an appointment get that appointment, which is where Jacob has made me completely just disregard the idea that I could use one of those appointments, and I'll just wait for my wake med.
No. That was not my intention whatsoever.
Well, you made me think about it.
Conversation.
Yeah, and you made me think about it. And now Steven, I'm going to just wait for Wake Med to email me and say, hey, I'll go get that one. Like, they have an actual wasted vaccine list. These ones that are out in Kinston and Goldsboro out in the rural areas, they're just like, we're just giving people these appointments because we don't have any. And that's different than, like, get here in an hour because we're going to throw these away. You know, that feels like a different angle on that story. Sure. So I'll stay on that, and when Wake Med calls me and says come by, I'm going. But otherwise, I'll just wait till flipping group five and get my vaccine with all the other normies.
I feel like I destroyed Steven.
You really didn't. You really didn't, because you make good. Look, I took in new information and new perspective and have applied it, and now I understand that could skew some of that, some of the allocations, and that makes sense. This is what we're supposed to do. You're supposed to be capable of taking in new data and new perspective, and then acting on it. It's not a gut check. Yeah. It just seems very obvious to me once you say it, right? True. It's very obvious that it would disrupt the allocations, and it would also potentially take an appointment from someone that could otherwise be getting help from someone else who is trying to help them get what they need, right? Like someone in Kinston who's got a son-in-law that's trying to get them an appointment, and they just missed it, and I filled it, and Kinston says, that's fine, when it really could have been better for that other person. There. That's what I mean.
So I will say this, and that was a real devil's advocate position to take, but how many people do you actually think are helping people get those appointments?
Not very many, but there's possibility of it. Possibility of it. Maybe they go to waste. Yeah. It's not. Look, I am not going to be the one that causes it to go to waste. There are 5,000 other people doing the exact same thing. Walgreens has been inundated with calls of people asking about wasted vaccines. To the point that I prefaced when I called Walgreens that I know you've probably got this call a lot, but I've heard a rumor that you are giving vaccines around 5:30 in the evening. She's like, yes. She's like, people have called about this a lot, and here's what's going on. And she was really clear about it. But still, I mean, it's a pain in the butt. You're like, I am bugging. These people have jobs to do, and we're all calling to try and get wasted vaccines. Like you said, the news has spread. Wasted vaccines exist, and the masses want them. And they're calling everyone in order to get them because we all want to go back to Alamo Draft House and drink a salted caramel milkshake and eat a Royale with cheese with our friends while watching Creed 3.
Or, Rambo, the last. I'll go to anything at this point.
Just put me in a seat.
It doesn't matter. Give me a seat, a vaccine, and a freaking Royale with cheese.
Just put me in a seat at the theater. That's all I want in my life.
Thunder, a Thriller and Vanilla.
That was a good one.
Stout, yep.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Ale or whatever I was drinking that night. That was good stuff. But anyway, let us know how you feel about the ethics of it. We want to hear it. staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to tell us with your voice, you can call us. What's that number, Travis?
231-486-5401.
That's the
231-486-5401. Call us.
Put that in your phone. Label it goats. And then 2 years from now, call it. Travis wants you. Yeah, Travis wants it. So that's the important thing to know there. give us your voicemails, your thoughts. We want to hear them, particularly on this ethics issue, because I think it is wide-ranging and interesting to us.
And if you don't know how to use your phone for actually making calls, you could send us an email at staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com. We do accept those. We want those. Send it to us. Let us know your thoughts.
There you go. Mm-hmm. If you enjoyed the show, think about telling your friends about it. Leave us a review on the old podcasting services there. We'd appreciate it. If you have any questions for us or quick comments, you can tweet us at @staring_goats. I'm Steve H&H on Twitter. Travis is TV's Travis. Jacob is the only one with some sense who doesn't use social media. If you want to support us in other ways, you can do so at twodorks.net/support. Support us on Patreon. Even $1 a month is pretty awesome to us. And we'd celebrate you like we celebrate Hammer Dwarf, Jesse, Og, Adam, and Christine of Geekheim, Oddly Normal One, and our parents who keep the lights on around here. Thank you all so much for being with us. We'll see you next time on Staring at Goats.